Hello, I'm Ian, and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, the 1st of October, 2025.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacon. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news. As a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD, simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Reading for you this week, we have myself, Ian, Angela, Liz, Mina, Simon, and of course, not forgetting Roger. In this week's edition, we have all the latest news from the Black Country, including information about all that's happening at our libraries during the autumn, as well as information and contact details for library services providing audio and tactile books. In collaboration with Parliamentary Health Service Ombudsman, PHSO, we continue our feature focus, including the fourth episode of our five-part series, helping to inform and better understand the Independent Complaint Handling Service, its processes and impact. You'll have to be sharp of mind as we have another Did You Know section with Roger and a quiz from Mina. And what does the weather hold for us? We hear from Mina, who has a forecast for the week ahead. There's been late drama for our football teams this week. We have all the reaction to the weekend's football action for Wolves and West Brom. And keeping with the theme of books for this edition, with thanks to St. Albans Talking News Service, we have a review of the audio version of Evelyn Waugh's satirical novel Decline and Fall. Local news to start, though, with me, Ian, Liz and Angela. Last week marked National Eye Health Week, and a West Midlands eye hospital has announced it is part of the first UK hospital group to launch innovative drop-free treatment to help the 1 in 3 people who will develop sight-threatening cataracts. This eliminates the inconvenient need to apply a range of eye drops 4 times a day for 4 weeks post-surgery. For NHS cataract patients at Optegra Eye Hospital in the region, this will mean no eye drops whatsoever post-surgery, many of which sting. So treatment ends on the day of surgery. No more concerns about correctly applying drops, which can be a challenge for some people, or reliance on friends or family to assist. Reduced risk of infection. Shorter recovery time. Based on published evidence and Optegra's own pilot study, this innovation means that Optegra Eye Hospital patients can reap the benefits of an injection during their procedure so that they do not need to apply 4 weeks of several different types of drops at various times of day. Optegra says this innovative approach improves care for its patients, delivering the ultimate in convenience as well as a medical advance, which is a revolutionary development in care. Mr. Alistair Stewart, medical director and consultant ophthalmic surgeon at Optegra, has led this transformation and improvement to the NHS cataract surgery patient pathway. He said, "For many years now, we have been providing high-volume cataract surgeries for the NHS, with the lowest complication rates. But we don't want to stand still. We always strive to improve patient care and experience. For many of our patients over the years, feedback has been that the intense drop regime post-surgery, some of which can sting, has been more challenging than the actual treatment itself. Traditional drops provide antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and lubricating properties, but the 4 sets of drops, some 3 times a day, some 4 times a day, are a great challenge for people to remember and a significant inconvenience for 4 weeks. Added to this, some patients find the act of applying drops very challenging and even need a family member or friend to be available 4 times a day to apply them. By providing a steroid and antibacterial treatment during the procedure, all this medication is provided in one go, and so once the treatment is complete, patient can relax without any further action and with the reassurance that all medications have been provided. There is substantial medical evidence for this approach, including research with 69,832 patients, where dropless outcomes revealed a lower risk of macular edema, buildup of fluid at the back of the eye post-surgery, compared to patients having traditional drops. And indeed, Optegra has offered this already to over 1,000 patients across some of its hospitals, and results have been overwhelmingly positive. The cystoid macular edema rate for those patients receiving dropless aftercare is less than 0.3%, which is a significant improvement compared to 1-3% with traditional post-operative drop regimes. At a time when NHS contracts are challenging the volume of referrals to the independent sector, Optegra's NHS Commissioning Director Melanie Andrews said, "Optegra's focus is and always will be exceptional patient care, which is why we have expanded our services and hospitals to meet the needs of tens of thousands of NHS cataract patients over recent years. We are eager to continue to do so and always want to improve. This revolutionary launch of post-surgery drop-free treatment is a significant improvement to the process for our patients. Within Trust and other independent hospitals, NHS patients will face 4 weeks of applying drops. But if patients have their free treatment with Optegra, they will not only receive superior lenses to replace their clouded cataract lenses, but they will also now avoid having to put in any drops whatsoever in the weeks after surgery." Now, the discomfort and fatigue of eye strain is not just limited to anyone with cataracts, but is something that can affect us all. With thanks to TNF Soundings contributors Fiona and Nikki, we head from Optegra to Odessa for a fascinating article from a group of technicians and ophthalmologists in Ukraine who have developed an app which combines therapeutic exercises and games, making the process of easing eye strain both simple and fun.
Hello, this is Nikki with an article written by Fiona entitled "Could an app from Ukraine reduce eye strain? Is our increasing use of mobile phones, laptops and other screens affecting our vision, causing eye strain and physical discomfort? If this is something which concerns you, the work of a startup group in Odessa, Ukraine may be of interest. Many people worry that viewing a screen often and for long periods can damage their eyes, but according to the College of Optometrists in London, there is no evidence of this. The Royal National Institute of Blind People, RNIB, agrees, stating that you can't harm your eyes by using a computer. They say computers don't cause permanent changes to your eyes or make eye conditions that you may have any worse. But some people remain worried that the blue light emitted by screens is harmful. On the positive side, both the RNIB and the Macular Society agree that inside the human eye, the lens filters out a lot of the light before it reaches the light-sensitive cells of the retina, so the exposure is much reduced. However, all agree that eye strain is common after heavy screen use. WebMD, an American corporation which publishes online news and information about human health and well-being, explains that eye strain is a common condition. It's not unusual to experience eye strain after spending a long time reading, looking at a computer, tablet or smartphone, or even driving. This means after heavy screen time, your eyes start to feel tired or sore, itchy or blurred. You may also develop a sore neck and shoulders. Most cases of eye strain are temporary and disappear after you've taken a break and rested your eyes. The good news is that in cases where eye strain is bothering you, there are easy exercises you can do to help relieve it. That's where a group of technicians and ophthalmologists in Ukraine have stepped in to help. They have developed an app which combines therapeutic exercises and games, making the process of eye strain both simple and fun. The Hillel Computer School in Odessa, a port city in Ukraine, is hosting the work, which is aimed at office workers, programmers, children and teenagers, and people who notice a decrease in vision. A year and a half ago, ophthalmologist Alexander Atmanov came up with the idea of creating a useful service that would help gadget users check their eyesight. Now, Alexander and his colleagues are working to improve vision in what they describe as conditions of digital overload, with research showing users spending on average up to 9 hours a day looking at screens. I'm an ophthalmologist working with both adults and children. My experience with mass screening and work at the Institute allowed me to see how widespread vision problems are, as well as the importance of prevention and timely diagnosis, Alexander explained. The initial idea was for mass vision screening in various educational institutions or offices, but later we realized that it was much more effective to implement it via a smartphone, supplementing the functionality with training capabilities and personalized recommendations. Called Roundel, the app is being tested at the moment by early adopters, including ophthalmologists, children at risk of myopia, gamers, and office workers. This allows developers to get feedback and improve and personalize the training techniques. The next stage of testing will involve expanding the audience through partnerships with clinics, educational institutions, and esports teams. This will allow Roundel to be fully adapted to the needs of individual users. Co-founder of Roundel, Igor Romanenko, is responsible for operational management and communications. He said, "Next steps in the development of the project will involve local testing and an initial launch and analysis of results on the Ukrainian market. After successful local testing, entry into the European and US markets is planned. We wish the team all the very best in their work." In the meantime, you may like to check the WebMD website, which has simple exercises for eye strain. If you go to the website www.webmd.com, enter the term eye strain in the search box to find the exercises, or use TNF's special shortcut web link, which is tnflink.uk/12k, all lowercase. That's tnflink.uk/12k.
Next up, we have another block of local news.
One of our most cherished pastimes is reading, and a local author has been speaking all about the success of his short story books. Thanks to our readers, over £1,000 has been raised for charity for this radio-reviewed book of mystery short stories, says Peter Frost, who lives in Wolverhampton. Peter went on to say, "The twisty storybooks address the needs of keen readers who have little time to read a book in one sitting. World Book Day this year told us that nearly 52% of people who started reading a book did not finish it in the last year because they didn't have enough time in the day. Each book addresses this issue as they are a collection of 15 to 20 10-minute read stories, and there is a twist at the end of each story. The challenge for the reader is to work out the twist before the twist gets you. Consumers love this, and in interviews this was discussed at length. The books are perfect for those who don't have time to read a full book in one sitting, or who have poor attention span, or even for a commuter with a short trip on the train. The third book is recently launched, so please encourage all to buy so that we can increase the amount sent to charity." Uncle Chris's collection of crafty short stories by Peter Frost are available to purchase via retailers such as Amazon.
Staying with the theme of books, and Wolverhampton's libraries are hosting a packed programme of free activities this autumn. They include history talks, poetry readings, art workshops, storytelling and craft sessions, coffee mornings, digital skills support, book clubs and themed events for Black History Month, World Mental Health Day and Green Libraries Week. A special exhibition will be unveiled at Low Hill Library on Wednesday the 1st of October to celebrate 100 years of the Low Hill Estate. A launch event will run from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. with the Friends of Wolverhampton Archives presenting a talk on the estate's history at 3 p.m. followed by a reading by local poet Emma Pursehouse in honour of National Poetry Day. There will also be an art workshop and a celebration of this year's Summer Reading Challenge winners. On Saturday, the 4th of October, Central Children's Library will host an African tale story and craft sessions for families, bringing Black History Month to life through interactive storytelling. Throughout October, there will also be a display of adult and children's books celebrating Black history at Central Library, while on Thursday, the 16th of October, the Memories of Bilston Local History Social Group will be taking a trip to the Reminiscence Chatty Cafe to visit its replica front room, a marker of 1960s Britain. To mark World Mental Health Day next week, 3 tea and talk mornings will be held to encourage open conversation over a cuppa. Finchfield Library will welcome visitors on Tuesday the 7th of October from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Tetnall Library on Friday the 10th of October from 10 a.m. to 11:45 a.m. and Penn Library on Tuesday the 14th of October from 10 a.m. to 11:45 a.m. All are welcome. Meanwhile, a new baby book time will launch at East Park Library next Tuesday, the 7th of October. Designed for babies in arms through to preschoolers, these relaxed 30-minute sessions of rhymes, songs, and sensory play will take place every Tuesday from 11:30 a.m. to 12 p.m. It is Get Online Week from the 20th to the 26th of October, and adults are invited to take part in an online craft club and a book and a brew club at Central Library on Monday the 20th of October from 5:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. Drop-in IT help sessions with Secret Angels will be held at Wensfield Library on Tuesday the 21st of October from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Warstones Library on Tuesday the 21st of October from 2:30 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. The Bob Jones Community Hub on Wednesday the 22nd of October from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. and Whitmoreen's Library on Wednesday the 22nd of October from 2:30 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. Central Library will also host a Skill Up workshop in Maths, English and Digital Skills on Tuesday the 21st of October from 12 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. A digital help session with TLC College on Wednesday the 22nd of October from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. and its regular digital skills drop-ins held every Thursday morning from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. For younger tech enthusiasts aged 7 to 12, Central Children's Library Code Club will meet on Monday the 20th of October, booking essential. Families can look forward to Halloween-themed fun at Central Children's Library, where a Halloween Havoc story and craft session for children aged 5 and over will take place on Tuesday the 28th of October from 2 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. and there will be a Halloween special Lego workshop for ages 6 and over on Thursday the 30th of October from 2 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. Both events are ticketed with limited spaces. Bookings can be made by calling 01902 552023. Finally, Green Libraries Week returns from the 27th of October to the 2nd of November, and Wolverhampton's libraries will celebrate sustainability with an online quiz on Tuesday the 28th of October from 5:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. Tabletop Games Night at Bilston Library on Wednesday the 29th of October from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. and a poetry performance by Emma Pursehouse at Penn Library on Friday the 31st of October from 11:40 a.m. to 12:40 p.m. All events are free and open to everyone. Councillor Bupinder Gakal, the City of Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet Member for Resident Services, said, "Our libraries are more than books. They're places where stories are shared, skills are grown, and everyone is welcome. This autumn, we're proud to offer a wide range of free events that celebrate heritage, creativity, and well-being. So please come along and join in the fun. It's free to join Wolverhampton's libraries. To find out more, please visit libraries. Call 01902 552025 or follow the library service on social media at Facebook and X. For further information on the audio and tactile library services available for visually impaired and print disabled people of all ages, let's head over to Soundings contributors Bob and Jill, who talk us through some of the different services on offer from different providers, and also speak with Claire Bell from the Listening Books service.
Hi, I'm Bob Baker.
And I'm Jill Hardiker.
And together we are Sound and Vision,
bringing you the best information, technology and interviews for the visually impaired and those supporting them.
In this podcast, we are chatting about library services and the charities that offer help to blind and visually impaired to access audio, braille, large print and tactile books.
If you struggle to read print, there are many ways to access books in different formats. Local libraries will be able to advise about what they can offer, and there are many charities and organisations that specialise in print difficulty.
One such charity is Calibre, and for a monthly or annual charge, there is access to their audio lending service, with over 20,000 books in 70 categories, including over 3,000 children's titles. Their services is free for young members under the age of 25 living in the UK.
Their collection is full of contemporary children's authors, including Michael Merpogo, Jacqueline Wilson, J.K. Rowling and Philip Pullman, as well as classics. They also keep up to date with titles that support the GCSE, A-level and PSHE national curriculum. Schools and colleges can open an account to allow teachers to see how the service can be used to support students with print disabilities.
The contact details for Calibre are telephone number 01296 432 339. Or you can email them on enquiries@calibre.org.uk. which is enquiries at calibre.org.uk. Another charity that offers audiobooks and magazines is Listening Books, who have been going since 1959. And we had a chat with Claire Bell about what they have to offer.
We provide an audiobook service for anyone who can't access printed books. So that includes visual impairments or illnesses, and also people with mental health conditions as well, such as anxiety and depression. So we try and support as many people as we possibly can across the UK. Our patron is Stephen Fry, so sometimes you might see him talking about audiobooks and how they've benefited him. He's been our patron for a number of years and supports us to share information about the service that we offer. So we work a little bit like a library where the members can borrow the books from us, and we add to the catalogue constantly. So the range of books kind of is always increasing. So we have about 9,500, possibly nearer 10,000 books now, which we add to monthly, weekly, depending on what funding is available, what members have requested. So we're very much member led. So we go from about age 7 right through to adult. So that includes fiction books like The Famous Five, right through to adult self-help books. One of the most popular categories we have is kind of cozy crime books, as we call them. So that's kind of the Agatha Christie's, the Agatha Raisin type books. In recent years, we've added a lot of other titles as well. So kind of crafting or things that you wouldn't traditionally think as being an audio book as well. So as I said, we're member led. So what we tend to do most often is take requests from our members. So if there's a particular title or an author that someone requests and we can go and find an audio version, we will do that and put it into the catalogue. What we also do is record a lot of educational titles. So those are the books that aren't available in audio that are educational, either because they're on a set text list for GCSE or A-level, or they are more broadly supportive of education. So it might be, you know, things like Horrible Histories we did when they weren't available in audio. And in recent years, we've kind of focused a lot on anxiety and depression and dealing with grief and those kinds of mental health conditions that are related to that. So we're always kind of trying to supplement the catalogue with those books that maybe members can't get elsewhere. That would be really beneficial. Members also get access to newspapers and magazines now as well, which is something we added a few years ago. And all of the newspapers and magazines come with an audio function, so you can listen to them, and they've got a visual element too. So those have been a really lovely addition to the catalogue to kind of expand what our members can have access to. And it's all included as part of their membership. As I've mentioned, our age range kind of is quite broad. So we go from age 7 upwards, because that's kind of the age that books make sense as an audiobook. Although we do kind of cater for ages slightly younger with some read-along books. So those are books where they have a visual element like pictures and things. So it's kind of like a picture book with the audio that goes with it. But yeah, right through up to adults and all the books that you can get for that.
Claire then went on to explain about how their membership works and what members can expect.
So how our members access those books has changed over the years. So we used to do tapes and CDs. We're now purely online with an app called Libby, which a lot of your listeners might already know about. It's available in a lot of libraries, and it's got a whole range of accessibility features on there that enable members to access our catalogue and then download them for later. They can also access books through our website as well, but that purely streaming, so with connection to the internet. And then in terms of how long members can keep them, there is a maximum of 3 weeks, but you can renew them or reborrow them. There's no kind of limit within that borrowing time, particularly, you know, some books are 24 hours long. You're not going to listen to that particularly quickly. Some of them are a lot shorter and you might want to return them and then borrow something else. So it's fairly flexible. And you get reminded each time a book's kind of due to return. In terms of how members join, we have a subsidised membership fee. Because we are a charity, we try and keep that as low as possible. So we offer a fully subsidised membership as well. So for those who couldn't afford, for whatever reason, they can have a free membership, or what we call a sponsored membership. And then they can access it, everything that everyone else would be able to with the paid membership. And then they get lots of extra features as well. So members get monthly newsletters where we talk about the new books. We have author interviews. We also run competitions in our bi-monthly larger newsletter, which has loads of different kind of features in there. So we really want it to feel like more of a club than a service in that way, in that members, you know, can talk to us, and there's always someone available on the phone or by email, and we'll go out to exhibitions and groups where we can to talk to people. In terms of whether anyone needs help, you know, there's always someone at the end of the phone or an email to help either download the app, join through the website, join over the phone if you need help. We spend a lot of time talking about books and sharing those books that we would recommend, or if people are not sure what they want to listen to, if they're kind of just starting out with audiobooks, we can recommend titles to get started with. So if anybody rings up, they'll probably speak to Jeremy. Jeremy's been with us for over 20 years, so he knows the catalogue really well. He knows the members really well. So that's probably the first person you'll talk to is Jeremy, and then potentially me as well. So there's always someone there that can help access the service. We're here, and I'd love it if people kind of gave us a ring. And if you have any questions, do ask about how it works or the books that are available, because we always want to make it as easy as possible for people.
One of life's joys is sharing a book, and the charity Clear Vision Project runs a postal lending library service for children's books, designed to be shared by children and adults with and without sight. They lend books all across the UK and Ireland. Clear Vision books all have braille, regular print, and pictures. This allows children with sight impairment to share books with their sighted friends and family. It also allows adult braille readers to enjoy stories with sighted children. There are over 10,000 books in the collection, catering from children from birth up to their independent readers.
They also have the UK's only loan collection of fully textured tactile image books, in which every illustration is specially designed to be explored by touch. With Clear Vision books, visually impaired or blind children and adults can enjoy all the pleasure, comfort and excitement that reading together brings. Books which contain both print and Braille are rare in the UK, which means blind children learning Braille can't share books with their friends, their family, or in the classroom. And this makes it harder for sighted parents and teachers to support a young Braille reader in learning to read and with schoolwork. It also means that Braille reading parents and grandparents struggle to find picture books to share with their sighted children for their education or enjoyment. Early literacy experiences set the foundation for children's learning, and shared reading is hugely important in this. Books with tactile pictures are even rarer, but they're perfect for children with all levels of sight impairment to build up their touch skills, learn about the world, and get all the enjoyment that sighted children get from a picture book.
The service is free to families, but there is a cost for schools and other organisations. The contact details for Clear Vision Project are phone 020 87 89 95 75, and the email address is info@clearvisionproject.org, which is info@clearvisionproject.org.
A good book can transport the reader to another time or place and bring learning to life. Another charity, Living Paintings, provide their Touch and See books, which is a free library of accessible books, images and resources.
So what's in the books? A picture book with Braille pages and painted raised tactile images. Audio descriptions with music and sound effects on CD or USB. The audio description is also available to stream from an online account for the duration of the loan. They also have a whole world of tactile audio box sets to help blind children visualise the world around them. Raised images to help little fingers understand more fully the details of an image that may be difficult to explain. For inquiries, call 01 635 299 771, or email info@livingpaintings.org, which is info@livingpaintings.org.
The RNIB have all kinds of services to access books, magazines and newspapers. RNIB's library is the largest of its kind, and it's completely free, with over 60,000 items in the collection. It has 11,000 Braille books in a wide choice of genre for both adults and children, and a giant print library amongst its services. For more information, go to their website, rnib.org.uk. That's rnib.org.uk.
And you can also access the Talking News Federation. TNF Soundings provides free high-quality audio content for Talking Newspapers, Talking Magazines and hospital and community radios to broadcast to people living with sight loss or other disabilities that make reading difficult. Their content is split into two categories. Information, that's audio publications, which provide information relevant to either a visually impaired audience, a print disabled audience, or both. And Time Out, audio publications which cover a variety of leisure activities, including hobbies, literature, culture and entertainment.
However you access print, it can be an enjoyable experience, and we hope that we have given you some ideas of how this can be achieved. Many thanks to Claire Bell for chatting to us and giving us an insight into listening books.
You've been listening to Sound and Vision with Bob and Jill. We'd like to wish you all the very best and ask you to take care. And until the next time, it's goodbye from the both of us.
Now it's time to test your knowledge, as we have the quiz questions for this edition brought to us by Mina.
Hello and welcome to this week's flashback quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, these are your questions. Here we go. Question one. How heavy was the first all-digital camera? Question two. How many photos are posted on Facebook each day? Question three. What could be dangerous about early photography? Question four. What is unusual about the name Kodak? Question five. Where are the cameras used by Apollo 11? And finally, question six. What is rarely seen on the faces in old photographs? I will be back with you later in the show to give you all your answers, but for now, best of luck.
Cheers for those questions, Mina. I'll get my mind working on them. Now, over the course of time, we may have all had regular appointments at a hospital eye service and received care and treatment from the NHS and or other services delivered by government departments too. Unfortunately, this does not always go to plan and may leave us somewhat worried, distressed, and left to deal with any shortcomings experienced. But who do we raise our concerns to? Well, the Parliamentary and Health Service Ombudsman, PHSO, was set up to provide an independent complaint handling service to make final decisions on complaints that have not been resolved by the NHS, government departments, and some other UK public organisations too. With thanks to the PHSO's Alison Smith and Chloe Salins, over the next few weeks, we are able to bring an exclusive series to the Black Country Talking News detailing more information about the service, the complaints process, and the impact making a complaint may have.
Episode 4. Hello again, it's Alison here.
And Chloe from the Parliamentary and Health Service Ombudsman. We're back with more information about bringing a complaint to us. Remember, we can investigate complaints about government departments or care and treatment from NHS providers. Today, we're going to take you through the investigation process at PHSO. So, what happens first, Alison?
Well, when you first submit a complaint, it gets processed by our intake team, and then it goes in the queue to be assigned to a caseworker.
And how long does it take for someone's case to be picked up by a caseworker?
The honest answer is, there's no set time. Like any business, there are times when we're really busy and get lots of complaints, and there are other times when things go a little quieter. Our intake team will be able to advise you on current waiting times. But generally speaking, parliamentary complaints get assigned a little bit quicker, as we get less of them and we have specialised teams that investigate them.
And once a caseworker has been assigned, what will they do?
So first, they'll conduct some quick checks. Is the complaint about a subject we can investigate? If not, we always try and signpost the service user to another ombudsman. Then, has the complaint been brought to us within the 12-month timeframe? And also, does the service user have a legal route available instead?
Okay, you've mentioned the 12-month timeframe there, and we've spoke about this in previous episodes, but could you just give us a bit more information on that?
So, our legislation says that people should bring a complaint to us within 12 months of finding out they had a problem or something went wrong. However, we can put the time limit to one side if there's a genuine reason for the delay. For example, if it took the local organisation a really long time to investigate the original complaint and the service user couldn't bring it to us any sooner.
Thank you. And what about if the service user has a legal route available instead?
Again, the legislation states that if people have a legal route available, they should be pursuing that instead.
Could you give us an example?
Sure. If someone was alleging medical negligence and they wanted thousands of pounds of compensation, we would not be the right people to speak to. In that instance, they should be finding a solicitor and pursuing a claim through the courts.
And what if someone can't afford legal representation?
Our staff can advise you on organisations that work on a no-win, no-fee basis.
Okay, so if the complaint is valid and is within the time limit and there isn't a legal route that's available, what happens next?
Once a caseworker is assigned, they'll contact the complainant to make sure they understand the details of the complaint and what it is that person is looking for. The caseworker will then consider three questions. Number one, does it look like the organisation may have made a mistake or provided a poor service? Number two, if yes, did that failing have an impact? And number three, if there was an impact, has the organisation already done all that it should to put things right?
And if the caseworker sees an indication that there may have been a failing, that it had an impact on the service user and that there might be more for the organisation to do to put things right, they'd complete a detailed investigation, right?
That's right. They ask the complainant for any evidence they want to share, and they ask the organisation being complained about for their evidence. This typically includes medical records and any relevant policies or guidance. Sometimes the caseworker will speak to an independent clinical advisor for their thoughts on the complaint, but the ultimate decision lies with the caseworker.
Before a final decision is made, the caseworker will send a draft report to both parties. This here outlines their current thinking and gives both sides the opportunity to make any final submissions or comments. The caseworker will then consider any additional information before writing up their final decision and report, which then gets sent to both sides.
If the caseworker makes any recommendations to the organisation, they will ask for an action plan to see when those recommendations are going to be carried out, and we always check that they have been carried out. Typical recommendations include an apology and acknowledgement of the mistake and the impact it had, changes to policy or process, and additional staff training. Occasionally, we recommend a small amount of financial redress, but as I said earlier, if someone is seeking significant levels of compensation, they should be going to court.
That's a lot of information to take in, and if anyone wants a recap, there are full details on our processes on our website, which is www.ombudsman.org.uk. Our website also has the Browse Aloud feature for visually impaired and dyslexic viewers.
We'll be back next week for one final look at complaints, and we'll be considering what makes them so important.
Next up, we have another block of local news.
Now, we may have all heard how it was a day of sadness for shoppers, young and old, on Saturday, as the historic Marks & Spencer's building closed for the final time. The store on Dudley Street in Wolverhampton had been part of the city's architecture and shopping landscape for 96 years, but officially closed its doors for good just before 4 p.m. However, there was an equally poignant air of sadness just a few miles out of the city, where a Wolverhampton business owner has finally agreed to take retirement after a career that spanned more than 60 years. Kenneth Clive, 76, will shut up his shop, Kenneth Clive Menswear, in Pattingham, South Staffordshire, for the final time in November. He entered the industry as a 15-year-old and went on to manage stores across the West Midlands and London's West End for Hepworth's, which later became Next, before starting his own fashion empire. And had it not been for an impromptu trip to the pictures, he would have likely been caught up in the Birmingham pub bombings in 1974, he claimed. Recounting his life, Mr. Clive was able to detail the exact time, date and location when his career began, after being promised a job at Hepworth's when he left school. He said it all started at 4:45 on the 1st of March 1964 on Dudley Street, Wolverhampton, when I walked into Hepworth's and said, "This is me." I was told that I wasn't supposed to start until Monday, but I said, "I start now. You said when I left school, and I've just absconded from school." By the age of 20, he was managing his first shop in Kidderminster, Worcestershire, which was followed by a second shop in Dudley 14 months later, and a third shop in Birmingham 3 years after that. It was while working in his Birmingham store, located in King Edward's House at New Street, he said he was fortunate to live to tell the tale. "I lived through the bombs in Birmingham in 1974, I was nearly blown up. Our shop was in King Edward House and the tavern in the town was below us. I think the bombing happened at 11 minutes past 8 and I should have been in there, but fortunately I had to go to the pictures that night, so I cancelled going in. After his narrow escape, he was promoted to the role of London's regional manager and oversaw 24 stores in locations such as Regent Street, Marble Arch and Oxford Street. I lived in the West End in London. It was fantastic. It was very exciting being in the West End, he said. I had a company flat for £7 a week, which is worth £2 million now, I would think. But in 1980, he opted to return to his roots in Wolverhampton. I wanted a house, and I couldn't afford London. I had to leave Next to do so, but it was good to be back. For the next 3 years, he worked as a freelance fashion consultant, providing home tailoring for disabled clients. Then, on the 4th of November 1983, Kenneth Clive Menswear in Pattingham was born. At one point, we had three shops in Pattingham. We had a shoe shop, a ladies' shop, and one for menswear, Mr. Clive said. Then, in 1988, I opened up a shop in Colway Road, Wolverhampton. The original menswear shop is all that remains, and that will close in November. I'm 76 and I said I would retire at 55, so I have had an extra 20 years, much to the dissatisfaction of my wife, but I just loved it, the businessman said. But you have to retire sometime, and I've never had a Christmas away in 62 years, so that's what I think I'll do. I'm thinking the Caribbean. Asked what he would consider to be one of his fondest memories, he said hiring West End star Beverly Knight MBE to perform at his wedding for just £80 in 1998. He said, at our wedding, I had Beverly Knight singing. I met her in a pub in Wolverhampton, so I booked her. £80. She was great.
Up next, it's trivia time, brought to us by Flashback Roger and his Did You Know feature. Take it away, Roger.
Hello again, everybody. Well, this week, I found some items about photography that I hope you'll enjoy. Have made me think how easy it is to take a snap these days, and to think about how technology has made photography and such an everyday thing in our lives. So here we go then. Now watch the birdie, and did you know that? It was in 1975 that Stephen Sasson invented the world's first digital camera. He was working for Kodak at the time. Stephen's camera weighed around 8 pounds, that's 3.6 kilos, and shot only 0.01 megapixels. The average weight of a modern camera is about 2 pounds, with an average resolution of 16 megapixels, or a whacking 1,600 times sharper. And there's no number for how many photos are taken a day, but estimates suggest that more than 1 trillion photographs are taken in a year. That's an average of 95 million photos are uploaded daily on Instagram, and over 300 million photos are uploaded on Facebook every day. But in days gone by, having your photograph taken could be a dodgy business. One of the most dangerous photography facts is about flashes. Photographers mix potassium chloride and aluminium. This mixture would create a bright light when introduced to a spark. These concoctions often led to violent explosions if they were not properly mixed. And most brand names have a strong connection between their product and their name. For example, Canon means a rule or principle. Ilford takes its name from its birthplace, and Olympus is the home of the Greek gods. But Kodak has no real meaning. George Eastman, the founder of Kodak, said that the letter K sounded strong, so he formed a word around it. And when Apollo 11 mission took off for the moon, they carried 12 Hasselblad cameras with them. The astronauts decided that the cameras were too heavy for the return journey, so that they left them behind to make space for the 25 kilos of rock samples that they brought back. They did, however, bring the film back with them. And if, like me, you've ever wondered why people rarely smiled on old photographs, well, they were taken with huge large format cameras, because the technology wasn't advanced, an image would take hours to expose correctly. The subjects didn't smile because they had to stay still for hours for one photo. taken a photo often involved the use of a head brace for support. Understandably, smiling for hours was a difficult feat. Well, after digging into this week's subject, I'm sure that I'll appreciate my camera phone more than ever before. So till next week then, keep smiling, watch the birdie, and saying cheese. Ooh, talking of which, I fancy a cheese on toast for my lunch for a change. So I'll say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra.
Up now we have to hear what the weather has in store for us. Brought to us, come rain or shine, by our own sunny Mina.
Hi everyone, it's Mina here with your forecast for the week ahead. After a relatively dry week of weather, all set to become a little more unsettled over the next few days. In result, UV levels shall remain at medium and may even drop down to low too. The sunrise and sunset times are 7:20 a.m. for the sunrise and 6:30 p.m. for the sunset. As for the weather, Friday 3rd of October looks like it will start off dry, but as we head into the afternoon, the rain will set in once again, with a moderate breeze drifting in from the southwest. Temperatures shall actually still reach a very respectable 16 degrees, and the wet weather is expected to continue into the weekend too, with light rain expected throughout Saturday 4th of October. There is a warning in place as the winds pick up in strength too, with a chance of gusts of up to 40 miles per hour. So do keep updated for any further weather warnings over the local media channels. The winds should ease as we head into Sunday, and so too the rain. With sunny intervals, temperatures should also continue to hold at 16 degrees. Into next week, and it's looking like a continuing mix of sunny intervals and light rain showers will be a pattern for the region from Monday 6th through to Thursday 9th of October. With the gentle southwesterly breeze also continuing, temperatures will hold at 16 degrees. So there we have it, no surprise for you this week, just another pick and mix of sunshine and showers. Do take care, have a wonderful week, and enjoy the weather.
Now it's time to find out how our local football teams have been getting on.
Wolves earned their first point of the season but suffered late heartbreak at Spurs as João Palhinha scored a stoppage time equaliser to salvage a point for Tottenham Hotspur and prevent Wolves from claiming their first Premier League win of the season. Having trailed at half-time in each of their 9 previous Premier League games, Wolves manager Vitor Pereira will have been relieved to see his team enter the break on level terms for the first time since April. Tuesday's 2-0 victory over Everton in the Carabao Cup helped to ease the misery around Molineux, and it was evident that it had given the players a much-needed confidence boost. Pereira made 9 changes from last weekend's defeat by Leeds, instead keeping faith in the side that triumphed against the Toffees. Sam Johnston kept his place in between the posts, and Wolves had the England goalkeeper to thank for keeping Spurs out for the majority of the game. Given the nod ahead of regular starter José Sá, Johnston twice denied Kudus and commanded his box to deal with a barrage of Tottenham crosses. After losing their opening 5 games, Santiago Bueno had poked home from close range for Wolves in the 54th minute. The Uruguayan failed to convert at the first attempt, but goalkeeper Vicario parried his strike into teammate João Palhinha, and the ball landed kindly back at the centre-back's feet for a simple tap-in. Even after Bueno's goal, Wolves continued to press high to pile on the pressure and threatened to double their lead. But in the end, there was little they could do to stop Palhinha's ferocious last-minute strike. Despite Spurs' late equaliser, there will be a sense of optimism around Wolves as they prove they are improving and can indeed compete with the league's top teams. And it was late goal heartbreak for the Baggies on Friday night against Leicester City too. After Villa loanee Samuel Eling Jr.'s magic handed Albion the lead early on with a superb individual goal, the home team was stung as Nat Phillips turned through his own net, which denied Albion all 3 points. It is another late sucker punch, later than the one against Derby 2 weeks ago. It is the third late goal they have conceded in games that have cost them, if you also count Derby in the EFL Cup. It isn't enough to really be worried just yet, but for as well as they defended, that late goal will be what is remembered. No blame to Nat Phillips, as the ball just strikes him and goes in. But what you don't want to happen is make a habit of conceding late. If it happens again, it could be a concern for Ryan Mason.
Now, here come the quiz
answers,
and they're brought to us by Mina.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Feeling confident? How will you score? Let's see. Question 1. How heavy was the first digital camera? And the answer? 8 pounds, 3.6 kilos. Question 2. How many photos are posted on Facebook every day? And the answer? 300 million. Question 3. What could be dangerous about early photography? Answer, a faulty chemical flash. Question 4. What is unusual about the name Kodak? And the answer, it has no actual meaning. Question 5. Where are the cameras used by Apollo 11? Answer, they're still on the moon. And finally, question 6. What is rarely seen on the faces in old photographs? And the answer, a smiling face. Did you get them all right? If not, not to worry, as I will be back next week to test you all once again. Bye for now.
Time now to grab a cuppa, find your comfy spot, and nestle down as we review the audio version of Evelyn Waugh's satirical novel Decline and Fall. Reviewers Marley and Debbie from St. Albans Talking News Service describe it as one of the funniest books they've read. Excerpts here are read by Rob from St. Albans Talking News Service, and the full audiobook is available from a number of providers.
Evelyn Waugh, born October 28, 1903, was an English writer regarded by many as the most brilliant satirical novelist of his day.
So here we are again. I have Debbie in the studio, and we were reviewing the audiobook of Decline and Fall by Evelyn Waugh. And what a jolly good book it was.
It was very good, and apparently it was his first novel written when he was only 25.
That's quite astounding, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't think I've laughed so much in a book, and especially with listening to it with headphones on, randomly laughing in places where people give me very strange looks.
Yeah, it's a light book, it's a short book, but it still has a few things to say, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I really liked it. And if you do go to Calibre and download the book or order the book, you will hear the original narration by Michael Maloney, which is well worth listening to. So, yes, very funny book, very satirical and very enjoyable. It follows a young man called Paul Pennyfeather. I've written down in my notes here, he's like a cipher. He doesn't actually say or do much.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and the fact that, you know, Paul doesn't actually say that much, does he?
No.
And there's a lot of yeses and agreements, and all the characters act around him. That was my thought going through. Yeah, he's kind of a cipher.
And actually, if you think about Brideshead Revisited, which he wrote later, he takes that and he takes it further, doesn't he? Because,
yes.
Charles is very definitely like that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that either. Yes.
It's just his mad society with everything happening around this person. So, yeah, this we can consider this an early experimentation, which really works.
Yeah, it does. I mean, as the quiet observer, you get to see all the characters in their true glory. And there are some very funny, ridiculous characters. but nobody actually does what they're meant to do. There's teachers who don't teach. There's parents who don't parent. And a whole rogues gallery of characters. Let's just take a pause here to have an excerpt when Paul first arrives at the school and meets Mr. Prendergast and Captain Grimes, both of whom become quite influential and really define his time at Clanaber Castle.
"I suppose you're the new master,"
he said. "Yes," said Paul. "I'm called Pennyfeather." The little boy gave a shrill laugh.
"I think that's terribly funny," he said, and went away.
Presently the door opened again and two more boys looked in. They stood and giggled for a time and then made off. In the course of the next half hour, six or seven boys appeared on various pretexts and stared at Paul. Then a bell rang and there was a terrific noise of whistling and scampering. The door opened and a very short man of about 30 came into the common room. He'd made a great deal of noise in coming because he had an artificial leg. He had a short red moustache and was slightly bald. "Hello," he said.
"Hello," said Paul.
"I'm Captain Grimes," said the newcomer. "Come in, you," he added to someone outside. Another boy came in. "What do you mean," said Grimes, "by whistling when I told you to stop?"
"Well, everyone else was whistling," said the boy.
"What's that got to do with it?" said Grimes.
"I should think it had a lot to do with it," said the boy.
"Well, just you do 100 lines, and next time, remember, I shall beat you," said Grimes. "With this," said Grimes, waving the walking stick.
"That wouldn't hurt much," said the boy, and went out.
"Oh, there's no discipline in the place," said Grimes, and then he went out too. "I wonder whether I'm going to enjoy being a schoolmaster," thought Paul. Quite soon, another and older man came into the room.
"Hello," he said to Paul.
"Hello," said Paul.
"I'm Prendergast," said the newcomer. "Have some port?"
"Thank you, I'd love to."
"Well, there's only one glass."
"Oh, well, it doesn't matter then.
You might get your tooth glass from your bedroom."
"I don't know where that is."
"Oh, well, never mind. We'll have some another night." "I suppose you're the new master."
"Yes."
"You'll hate it here."
"I know. I've been here 10 years. Grimes only came this term. He hates it already."
"Have you seen Grimes?"
"Yes, I think so. He isn't a gentleman."
"Do you smoke?"
"Yes.
A pipe, I mean."
"Yes."
"Those are my pipes. Remind me to show them to you after dinner."
So Evelyn Waugh himself, what I only found this out recently, was a schoolmaster.
Yes.
For a short period. Yeah. So this is a little autobiographical, isn't it? Because it won't spoil anything to say that Paul starts off as an undergraduate.
At Oxford, yes.
Who is sent down for, now, was it indecent exposure?
It was indecent exposure. He's a victim of a prank, isn't he?
So. Yeah.
We don't quite know what happens, but he ends up with no trousers on.
Yes, I don't think he exposes more than the middle of his legs, but yeah. There we are. It's a prank. And things do seem to happen to poor old Paul. So he's no longer allowed to stay at Oxford.
He gets sent down.
Sent down is the term.
Phrase, yeah.
And his uncle, now his parents had died.
Yes.
Is that right? So his uncle is his guardian and
he
said, basically, I'm not funding you anymore. You need to get a job. So the only thing you can possibly do is teach.
And he goes for an interview and he ends up at Clanaber Castle, which is a school. And again, I've written in my notes, it was like the kind of male version of St. Trinian's.
Yes.
Just complete chaos and no teaching's going on. The kids are all sort of acting up and...
Oh, yes, they rule the roost, totally.
Absolutely. So he becomes a young master there, where he meets, and again, these are two wonderful characters, Mr. Prendergast, who was somewhat of a lay priest.
Exactly. Yeah. He'd been training as a vicar, and then he started having doubts. These doubts plague him for the rest of his life.
Yes.
So at this point, in any case, he's, I think, an ordinary teacher. I don't think it's even religious or theoretical, theological studies. So, yes, he's a sort of fallen angel as well, in a way, isn't he? I mean, all these characters, we should add, they're not really deep, are they? They're more than ciphers.
Yes.
They're sort of caricatures, but it doesn't really matter because of the nature of the book.
They are characters, as you say, and quite kind of huge, grotesque characters in a sense, but very, very funny. And Mr. Prendergast is one of the teachers there, and he's a little bit scared of the boys, I think.
Oh, very scared.
He wears a toupee, which all the boys obviously mock him.
Yeah, and he said something like how he made the wrong decision to wear it, and now he's regretting it, but he can't go back on it.
Let's go to the audio book and have an excerpt from the man himself, Mr. Prendergast, as he explains about his wig.
Ah, you're lucky. I find all boys utterly intractable. I don't know why it is. Of course, my wig has a lot to do with it. Have you noticed that I wear a wig? Oh, no, no, of course not. Well, the boys did as soon as they saw it. It was a great mistake, my ever getting one. I thought when I left Worthing that I looked too old to get a job easily. I was only 41. It was very expensive, even though I chose the cheapest quality. Perhaps that's why it looks so like a wig. I don't know. I knew from the first it was a mistake, but once they'd seen it, it was too late to go back. They make all sorts of jokes about it. Well, I expect they'd laugh at something else if it wasn't that. Yes, no doubt they would. I dare say it's a good thing to localise their ridicule as far as possible. Oh dear, oh dear. If it wasn't for my pipes, I don't know how I should manage to keep on. What made you come here? Well, I was sent down from Scone for indecent behaviour. Oh yes, like Grimes. No, said poor family, not like Grimes.
Captain Grimes, who is a complete cad.
Yes, he's a terrible man.
A terrible, awful man who seems to spend his whole time boozing and womanising and a complete scoundrel. And is running away from several different parties. There's an ex-wife and there's police after him and all sorts of things going
on. Is he a bigamist?
He is the bigamist in this, and he marries the headmaster's daughter. So there's this merry troop of awful schoolmasters, none of which are doing their jobs properly. And then they have a school sports day, which just turns out to be the most hilarious thing. And they don't seem to have any hurdles and they don't remember where any of the equipment is stored. And of course, the only reason the school is having the sports day is to raise money. And the head is hoping that two of his pupils' parents will attend so he can tap them up for funds. Here's the headmaster, Dr. Fagan, talking to Paul about other events he's organised that haven't gone quite to plan.
During the 14 years that I've been at Chanaba, there have been 6 sports days and 2 concerts, all of them in one way or another utterly disastrous. Once Lady Bunyan was taken ill. Another time it was the matter of the press photographers and the obstacle race. Another time some quite unimportant parents brought a dog with them which bit 2 of the boys very severely and 1 of the masters who swore terribly in front of everyone. I could hardly blame him, but of course he had to go. Then there was the concert when the boys refused to sing God Save the King because of the pudding they'd had for luncheon. One way and another I've been consistently unfortunate in my efforts at festivity, and yet I look forward to each new fiasco with the utmost relish.
It's fair to say there is a section in this sports day which is written with language of its time.
Completely, yes. And not language we would use currently.
I know some publishers are now taking out
references,
language like that.
Yes.
Yes, I mean, I know in Agatha Christie's, which I'm not 100% behind, because I feel we should be learning from prejudices gone by, you know, learning from the mistakes we've made.
Yes.
And we should feel embarrassed that people used to say these things.
Yeah.
Just celebrate the fact we're moving on. But yeah, I found that quite an uncomfortable passage. I really like the organ lesson story. So I found out that when War was a teacher, I mean, obviously, Paul is very out of his depth because he's suddenly been thrown into not this just this strange school, but teaching. He has no idea how to teach. Mm-mm. No idea at all. And particularly, not being a musical person, he has no idea how to teach someone the organ and ends up having to teach the organ to someone who is already quite good at it. And apparently that really happened to Evelyn Waugh.
although it's set in 1920s, I mean, there was some criticism that it might have aged a bit and that the satire is not quite as biting as it would be then. But I didn't find that at all.
No, people are still people, aren't they?
Absolutely, yeah. And I felt it had a timeless quality about it. Human frailties and faults are universal and they still exist today. Mm. We still have awful teachers and we still have cads and we still have, you know, awful parents. So those traits I found were very good. All the more funny for him and the situations he puts them in.
Yes. And we can't give away too much of the plot, but it is worth saying that he draws a hilarious parallel between the British public school system and the British prison system. I love the way that the governor thought it'd be good to give an ex-carpenter some tools so that he could feel useful. And let's say that these tools were then used inappropriately.
Yes.
Yes, it was so funny.
Yeah, everything they tried to do sort of backfired, really. So our three reasons for listening to this audiobook, what would you say?
I mean, the main reason is, Marley, it is one of the funniest books I have ever read.
I'd agree with that.
Secondly, I think it paints a wonderful picture. I can imagine everything. You know, the theatre maker in me, I see this in front of me so easily. And thirdly, it's a short novel. I mean, in a way, that's a disadvantage because it's all over so quickly. But if you're wanting something that will keep you amused and isn't completely vacuous, then I think this is a superb choice.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. As I said in the beginning, it really did make me laugh out loud. The scenarios, the language. And I think that's where War was really clever.
And as I say, he was 25. This is the beginning of it. He's one of my favourite authors. You can see how this is the beginning of his career.
Those characters still are around today. I mean, obviously, that they are taken to an extreme in the novel, but it is so funny. Definitely worth, if you can and have the time to download it or order it from Caliber, I definitely would. It's a great listen. And with that, thank you so much, Debbie.
Not at all. It was an absolute joy. Thank you.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sightless tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who, without their support, we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us. Stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!